Have you ever had something bad happen to a guitar within 24 hours of purchasing it? Well, I did. In fact, this very guitar that I'm holding here. And today I'm going to tell you how I came to own this guitar, what happened to it, and actually what it taught me. Before we get started with the story of that Martin OM28 Marquee that had a rough 24 hours with me when I first brought it home, let me make sure that we're all on the same page. Acoustic Tuesday is gearing up for a brand new season starting in mid-October, and I am so very excited. But you might be wondering, wait a minute, what's going to happen between now and mid-October? Well, right now, Whitney and I are preparing for the arrival of our new baby boy, Emerson Towns. So I'm taking this time to be at home, help Whitney out around the house, and ultimately prepare for his arrival. So I'll be doing some guitar geek new dad check-ins in this intermittent time while we're gearing up for the new season. I am super excited for it, and I hope that you are excited for, well, the new season of Acoustic Tuesday, and of course, our new family member as well. With that being said, let's go ahead and get back to the story of my Martin OM28 Marquee. This guitar here, this Martin OM28 Marquee, has taught me a whole hell of a lot. In fact, we'll get to its tragic first 24 hours with me here in a moment, but I think we should start at the beginning when I first purchased this guitar. This guitar came into Music Villa when I was working there, I want to say right around 2014. Ironically, Whitney and I had just gotten together, and I was kind of, I purchased this guitar for two distinct reasons. Number one, I really liked it, but I kind of wanted to proclaim my guitar geekiness to Whitney. Almost a test, if you will, if she could handle me bringing a new guitar into the relationship. She passed the test with flying colors, by the way. But this guitar came in, I reviewed it, and I believe I said during the review, I think I'm in trouble here because this is probably going to be my next guitar. Today, we will be reviewing what is likely to become my next guitar. This guitar sounds awesome, and the OM28 Marquee combines all the beautiful things from Martin's golden era into this nice little OM28 package, and it sounds incredible. It sounds great flat picked, it sounds great strummed, it sounds great finger picked, it sounds great just even looking at it. You can imagine how great it sounds. It's a killer guitar. Let me give you the rundown. And I certainly was in trouble because this became my next guitar. Yes, within 20 minutes of that review, I had figured out what I was going to trade in for it, an old electric guitar and some other musical equipment, and this guitar became mine. And I was so excited. As I mentioned before, not to get all super geeky on the specs, but it's a nice comfy OM body size. So it's a smaller body size, thinner waist. It's got an Adirondack spruce top, golden era style bracing, East Indian rosewood back and side, a modified, back and sides, plural, a modified V neck, nice 1¾ bone nut, and just has this vintage feel and just an incredible tone. I found this guitar to be incredibly versatile as well, from flat picking to finger picking, alternate tunings. It really kind of can handle anything that you throw at it. And I was so excited to bring this guitar home. I was excited to show it to Whitney. I was excited to play it. In fact, one of the first things I did was install a strap button here because I wanted to put a strap on it and just basically spend as much time with the guitar as possible. You know, think like walking around the house, that kind of a thing. Well, I brought it home and I did just that. The apartment that I was living in at the time, actually it was not an apartment, it was a friend's house that I was kind of I don't know if we can say, squatting at? Maybe I was squatting at it. I wasn't paying any rent, but they were so gracious enough to let me stay at their house while I did actually get an apartment. But nonetheless, they had a really nice kind of a kitchen bar, and they had these nice tall metal stools. And I brought this guitar home. Again, I had the strap around my neck, and it was just, I was playing the guitar so much. Now, these tall stools were metal. They had a metal back, and they were about, I would say, torso height. You know, I think standard bar stool with a back. And upon my excitement and walking around the house,
I walked smack dab right into one of those stools with the face of the guitar. In fact, this particular guitar got a pretty hefty ding. I don't know if you can see. You can kind of see it through the grain lines there, right there. So that was within, you know, maybe an hour of me taking it home. Brand new guitar. I was ultra, ultra bummed. In fact, it took me a real long while to get over it, but it taught me something, and I'll tell you that in a second. This guitar had one more tragedy, actually two more. I'll share two stories with you. The next tragedy was literally, it was either the following day or within 2 or 3 days. This guitar sparked major inspiration in my life, and I started writing songs with lyrics, which is very, very much outside my realm of comfort. I don't normally do that, but this guitar kind of brought that out of me. So as I'm writing in my notebook in my haste, the pen slipped off the page and put a ding in the top of the guitar right here. And I don't know if you can actually see. Oh yeah, there it is. There's the ink. You can see the ink right there. So that happened the following, again, 2 or 3 days later. So not only did I get a nice ding, I got a nice ink stain in the nice Adirondack spruce top. Again, I kind of sat there and looked at it like, man, you got to be kidding me right now. I just got this guitar. I absolutely love it. It's inspiring me. I love the way it sounds. I put a huge ding on the lower bout. I put a pen into the top of it. What kind of guitar owner am I? One more story, and then I'll tell you the lesson that all of these things actually taught me. And that is, this was months later. I was able to score a gig at the local coffee house, and I was playing there every Sunday morning. It started out as a solo gig, and then one of my good friends here in town, somebody who I played in a band with when I first moved here, Jim Dungan, great guitar player, almost like he's one of those guitar players that I always look up to and somebody that I always seek out to play with because he's so good and he's so kind and he, I think, brings out the best in me and continues to teach me things every single time we play together, whether he knows it or not. So Jim, if you're watching, thank you for being not only a great friend, but just an awesome mentor as well. So long story short, Jim started joining me for those Sunday morning gigs, and it was so fun. We got to just jam, develop our relationship, both musically and personally, and it was just a fun, super, super fun time, and a very growthful portion of my guitar journey. I look back on those times with great, great fondness. But one Sunday morning, I was actually on my way to the gig, and had the guitar with me, of course, but I had to stop at the studio to get some of the PA gear. So I stopped there, and I'm kind of hastily loading things up because I was running a little bit behind. Sunday morning, I like to sleep in sometimes. It's just the way it goes. And I remember getting out of my car, closing the door with my left hand, my driver's side door, and somehow my hand slipped off the end of the door, ended up in the door frame, and then the door closed on top of my hand. Yes, I should have put a disclaimer, graphic story ahead. And I remember looking at my hand stuck in the door and not being able to pull it out. And then reaching over with my right hand, undoing the doorknob and freeing my hand and just looking at my pinky finger, and it was covered in blood and it hurt. It was like throbbing. And I felt lucky because it was only my pinky finger. So I remember getting on the phone with Jim and saying, hey Jim, I guess the gig's off this morning. I just slammed my hand in the car door and I think I broke something or I think something's bad. But needless to say, I can't play right now. So he's like, well, yeah, that's fine. Go to the hospital, go to the urgent care, whatever. So that's what I did. I actually called Whitney. Whitney came and got me and took me to urgent care. It's not that I couldn't drive. I was just kind of frightened by the whole thing, and she was a better driver than I was at that point in time. So we went to urgent care, and we go to the doc's office or whatever, not a regular doctor, just an emergency doctor. And he said, yeah, that looks rough. Let's go ahead and take an x-ray, and hopefully I can report good news. Maybe it's just a cut, and it'll heal on its own. And I'm thinking, sweet, this is great. It's just a cut. And I won't have to deal with any broken digits. So he comes back in the room and he says, I got great news for you. You broke just the tip of your pinky, nothing else. To which I then informed him, thank you. Unfortunately, I'm a musician and the tip of my pinky is actually really important. he was like kind of, you could see his whole demeanor kind of sink as well. He was just like, oh, guess not the best news. Anyway, I went ahead and got my finger splinted, and it took like 6 weeks for it to feal, and probably a good 2.5 to 3 months for me to be able to start actually using it as a fretter again. I was just kind of sitting in a splint for a long time, but I'm thankful that it's back in action. But this guitar was with me during that whole thing, and let's move on to the actual lessons that all of this taught me, because you might be thinking, wow, this guitar might be cursed. You know, you're banging it this way and that. You put a pen in the top of it. You broke your finger when you were bringing it to a gig. And I think very easily you could look at that in a negative way. And I think for a time I certainly did. I didn't attach those feelings to the guitar, but I remember thinking, okay, what is the deal with me in this instrument? But one of the things that it taught me is that, you know, when you become the owner of a new guitar or a new to you guitar, whether you buy used, vintage, brand new guitar, whatever the case may be, you're essentially starting your story with that guitar at that point in time. And what I first looked at as a major flaw in the guitar, this huge ding in the top that I put in it, now I look back and I remember that apartment that friend's house that I stayed in. I remember the stools. I remember the way that the kitchen table looked. I remember the way that the kitchen looked. And I remember that time in my life. And I actually remember the exact song that I wrote when I put the pen through the top of this instrument. It's kind of a waltzy song that I like to sing. It's like kind of like a country song. And maybe here in a little bit, I'll sing it for you when I get some new strings on this guitar. In fact, you know what? Yeah, I got to show you some new strings in this episode, so I'll put those on, and I'll go ahead and sing you that song with this guitar a little bit later. But that's what that pen mark reminds me of. And then, of course, the guitar itself does remind me of that time when I broke my finger. And I look at that all as kind of the story of this guitar and I together. And it's really interwoven in my whole, in Whitney and I's relationship as well, because this was the first guitar I bought when I met Whitney. And now here we are, you know, some 6 years later, expecting our first child and growing our family. And it's just kind of cool that a guitar itself can almost act like a time machine. And it's something I want to encourage you to do with your instruments. In fact, I have two questions for you that I want you to answer in the comments below. Number one, have you ever purchased a guitar and had something, you know, that you thought was tragic happen to it? You know, I'm talking like within the first week. Maybe you brought a new guitar and you closed the case lid on it and put a ding in the top. Something like that. Or maybe it fell off a stand or something. And the guitar is okay now, but at the time it was tragedy. If you have any of those experiences, please let me know in the comments below. Number one, I'm just kind of curious if that's something that happens to everybody. Number two, you'll probably make me feel a little bit better about still being a good guitar owner, even though that happened. And then the second thing that I want to ask you is there a guitar that you own that has a ding or a scratch or something, some quote unquote defect in it that reminds you of a time and a place or a story from your past or a story that you shared with a guitar? Let me know in the comments below if you have a guitar like that. Let me know what it is, what the defect is, and then what it reminds you of. I think it's kind of nice to be able to look at our guitars as almost like a storybook in a way. So again, leave that in the comments below. I'd absolutely love to hear from you.
But when I give...
Sorry. I mentioned last week about some new strings that I want to try, and well, I want you to hear this guitar and why I bought it. Hear how 6 years of aging and playing can affect a guitar's tone. So I thought I should play that song I was telling you about on this guitar. You know, the one I wrote that left that little ink spot on the front of the guitar? Well, I'm gonna do that, but this guitar's strings are gross. They're actually really old and kind of corroded. So I'm gonna change the strings, and I thought this is a perfect star alignment moment because I wanna share with you these D'Addario nickel bronze strings. Now, I may have reviewed these before, and I wanted to kind of touch on them again because I had some rekindled interest in them. As you may or may not know, I'm a huge fan of the Santa Cruz Parabolic Tension Strings. Santa Cruz Guitar Company makes a great set of strings, the Parabolic Tension Strings. I favor actually both the mid-tension for my smaller-bodied instruments and, the light tension for my smaller-bodied instruments and the mid-tension for my larger-bodied instruments. And I thought, you know, I like to still keep things fresh and try out other strings just so I know what's out there. I'll try these nickel bronze strings on my Thompson Dreadnought, which really sounds good with the Santa Cruz guitar strings, but I thought, you know, this will be a good experiment. So I threw the nickel bronze strings on my Thompson Dreadnought and they sounded okay. They didn't necessarily overly excite me. I thought it kind of made the guitar sound a little bit more dull. Now you might be thinking, well, this isn't a real high recommendation of these nickel bronze strings. Now, I know that's true, but it just goes to show that different strings act differently on different guitars. And a mahogany dreadnought might not necessarily need nickel bronze strings, but I thought it'd be really cool to try them out on this OM28 Marquee, which has rosewood back and sides, to see how these nickel bronze strings will actually affect the tone. So let me go ahead and restring this guitar and play a song on it, and we can hear how the strings sound. I'm really actually impressed with the way these strings work on the OM28 Marquee. Again, these are the D'Addario nickel bronze strings. This is a set of mediums, and what I've noticed is that, and this is kind of a first impression, I barely actually tuned them up. They might go out of tune a little bit, but overall, I'm feeling like they mellow out the mid-range scoop that rosewood oftentimes has, meaning it almost makes it a little bit more of a gradual transition between that overwhelming bass and that nice, juicy mid-range that we want out of a guitar, and the trebles seem to sing pretty nicely as well. Overall, I'm pretty impressed. A really great match, and it just goes to show that, you know, strings might not work on one guitar because of the tone wood combination or the style of guitar or the way it's braced or its inherent resonance. But if you bring that same set of strings to another guitar, it really can liven it up and be a perfect match. That being said, let me go ahead and play a song for you. Make sure this guitar is in tune first. I'll play a song for you that I wrote, the very same song that put this pen mark in the top of this guitar. So here goes nothing. Thank you. dance around with any poor sap that's gotten to working late. You threw diamonds at the wall because you knew it all. Look, there's Mr. Wright, he's just out of sight. Bones where you wear today. Not much you can do to hide them away. You can have your purple dream. Sure ain't fun as it seems. Small town girl in some cheap boots and a second hand dress. Each little note gives you reason to glow. Bones will you wear today? Not much you can do to hide them away. Take a look in your closet and see. Bones will you wear? Awesome. So that was a song I wrote on this guitar, and kind of a cool full circle moment to throw some new strings on here, hear how they sound, and share that song with you. So I hope you enjoyed it. I've got one more thing that I want to share with you today, and it's two record box sets that I think you're really going to like. These box sets are right up your alley if you're a blues fan, if you're a music history fan, and if you love box sets and a music listening experience that's just all immersive, these are for you. Let me go grab them and I'll go ahead and share them with you. This just in, there's brand new Guitar Arsenal shirts at the Acoustic Tuesday store. Just visit acoustictuesday.store to see the new Guitar Arsenal designs we have in store for you.
And now back to your regularly scheduled program.
The box sets that I want to share with you are box sets put out by Third Man Records, and they are called The Rise and Fall of Paramount Records. They came out in two different box sets, and let me just show you how visually stunning these are, and then we'll dig into the contents of them. So first up, this is volume one. This is, again, The Rise and Fall of Paramount Records. Now, crazy thing is that Paramount Records was associated, or maybe even started by the Wisconsin Furniture Company, I believe. I haven't done the full reading of what's inside, but the box set itself comes in this beautiful wooden cabinet with these kind of brass appointments, and you can see the Paramount Records logo right on the front. So that's the first one. That's volume one. Volume 2 is kind of this classy, almost Art Deco, shiny box. It's just so, it's such a beautiful, beautiful work on the packaging. So this is Volume 2. Now, both of these record sets contain some incredible, incredible, not only records, but actual resources. I'm talking old magazine ads, full-on books about the history of Paramount Records, field guides about the artists of Paramount Records and their discography, plus a USB that allows you to listen to this music, not in vinyl format, but actually on your computer if that's more convenient for you. So that being the case, I was originally gonna do kind of an unboxing thing, and because I'm at the home studio and I don't have the camera stuff to make it look as sexy as it needs to be, I actually, I found some footage online and I want you to check this out. These are truly, truly incredible and a must have for any blues fan, music history buff, or somebody that just, again, likes that immersive musical experience. So let's take a look and see what's inside.
The song was recorded in 1930.
Last Kind Word Blues, Geechee Wiley.
Geechee Wiley's eerie lament.
Now imagine being in the room while she's recording this song.
The last kind word I hear my dad say.
The original 78 of Last Kind Words Blues was released by Paramount Records, a powerhouse in black music before the war. The extraordinary rise and fall of Paramount is chronicled in a two-volume box set.
So what were you trying to show with this?
How ludicrous that I could be, really, with my free time.
Co-producer Jack White, the former White Stripes frontman and founder of Third Man Records, spent 3 years on the project, which includes 1,600 tracks.
Jack, this is really an epic project.
Oh, this is, you know, you can sit down on a Sunday and spend 7 hours with this, and you've only gotten through about 5% of it.
Paramount Records would unwittingly change the course of American music. Started by the white-owned Wisconsin Chair Company, which also made wooden cabinets for phonographs, Paramount was created to spur sales. The label released artists in all genres, but their biggest sellers were race records. Blind Lemon Jefferson's 1926 recording, Long Lonesome Blues, would sell in the six figures.
How did Paramount get into race music?
Well, there was Mayo Williams, who was a producer, and he was there linked to African-American culture.
Williams, a Brown University graduate, scoured the South looking for talent.
In a way, he was the first African-American music executive.
I think so, yeah. I think he's really important.
Paramount artists would include a young Louis Armstrong, Ethel Waters, Jelly Roll Morton, and Charlie Patton, father of the Delta Blues. The label advertised in African-American papers like the Chicago Defender.
They mythologize all of the blues musicians, which is beautiful. But there's also these incredible illustrations and drawings, and no one has any idea who did these drawings. He's mm-hmm. just a ghost. He's lost to time, him or her.
In a way, you're bringing back a lot of ghosts here.
Well, don't I look like one? I mean, there's so many of those singers. You just have a name, there's no photograph, there's no record of who they are, where they came from.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. And we're lucky to have that.
The Depression took down Paramount. The last recordings were made in 1932. But Jack White's labor of love helps restore Paramount's place in music history.
I want it to be something, you know, 100 years from now, 200 years from now, someone will drag out of the attic and it'll inspire some songwriter then. We'll listen to Charlie Patton or Geechee Wiley and find something beautiful and trigger something new and carry that forward. I hope that happens with it.
It really is an incredible package. This is brushed aluminum they've got here. It comes with vinyl records in addition to, you know, regular CDs and also like replicas of the ads from these recordings back in the day. It's an extraordinary box set, and it's actually up for a Grammy for box set and packaging.
Yeah, it's amazing. You really can see, both in your interview and in the actual product, how lovingly
yes.
he put this together. I mean, 3 years
it's
of your life.
It's a true passion project.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you can see, these are truly stunning. And if you yourself are a music history buff or you know somebody that is, Would make a great gift. I mean, we do have Christmas and the holidays coming right around the corner, so just keep that on your radar. Now, that being said, these are not, these are kind of like, I guess I kind of considered them investment quality. These were not inexpensive box sets, so you should know the price going into them. I think for the two, I want to say I paid $640. I think that there's a bundle option on the website, the Third Man Records website. Nonetheless, they're stunning, and if you want to make that investment, if you find yourself wanting that full immersive musical experience, these are certainly a good place to start. I should note that I believe they're limiting it to a total production run of 5,000. I'm not entirely sure about that, but when I received the boxes, it had like, you know, I think the volume one was number 1,467 of 5,000, and the volume two was 1,600 something of 5,000. So that leads me to believe that they're probably limiting this run to some point, because I believe that they're probably difficult to manufacture. But nonetheless, I wanted to share that with you because that's what I've been listening to this entire week. Literally, I'll dedicate an hour in the evening to come down to my studio, throw on a couple of different records, read the book alongside, and it's just a great experience. And again, I wanted to share that with you. So that pretty much wraps up today's episode of Acoustic Tuesday at Home. I want to thank you for joining me today. Let's take a quick sneak peek into next week. Next week, I'm going to be telling you the story behind my Mule Tricone, why I wanted the instrument in the first place, how it came to be, and another lesson that a guitar taught me. Yes, that guitar taught me a huge lesson. In fact, it even leads up to some recent developments that I can't wait to share with you. We'll also be digging into some of the Ask Me Anything questions, and I believe I've had quite a few mailbag arrivals, so I want to share all that with you on next week's episode of Acoustic Tuesday from Home. And I just want to say really, truly thank you all for joining me on this journey. It's been a little bit weird for me to not be in the studio, but being able to do this and chat with you from my house really excites me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Thank you again for your time today. I really appreciate it. Thank you for being a Guitar Geeks, and remember, Guitar Geeks Unite. I'll see you next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Mountain Time right here on YouTube for another round of Acoustic Tuesday at Home. Cheers.